Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We're ready to hear argument now in the case of Cavell International against Madigan. Mr. Calabrese.
May it please the court, Phil Calabrese on behalf of Cavell International and the individual plaintiffs. Plaintiffs acknowledge the broad discretion enjoyed by the state in legislating to protect the health, safety, and welfare of its citizens. This case presents one of the rare circumstances, however, in which the burden on commerce, and foreign commerce in particular, is so great and the state's interest so slight that the statute does not withstand constitutional scrutiny. The goal of Illinois House Bill 1711, whatever interest the state wants to assert now on appeal to try to rationalize and justify that burden, the goal of the statute is clear. It's an attempt to restrict the culinary options available to Europeans who happen to consume the product processed by Cavell and are, in fact, its only consumers. And the statute affects this interest by taking...
Well, the governor's signing statement refers to the desirability of protecting horses from being killed. So isn't that a legitimate state interest?
That is a legitimate state interest, but it's not one that's advanced by this bill, Your Honor. The state, as we acknowledge in the briefing, has an interest in promoting the welfare of animals, but House Bill 1711 has nothing to do with that interest. Under the statute, it remains perfectly legal today for you or for me to step outside this courthouse and to slaughter any number of horses we want.
Well, but according to one of the amicus briefs, you pay for horses. But if a person who has a horse wants to get rid of it, it has to pay. I mean, if the horse dies, it has to pay to get it hauled off. And would have to pay to have it euthanized if it hadn't died yet. So isn't that an inducement to sell horses to you rather than let them live a little longer? Right, if you sell a horse to you, presumably it's still healthy because the regulations on slaughtering wouldn't allow you, I assume, to make food out of an unhealthy horse. So if you sell the horse to you while it's healthy, you get paid. If you wait until the horse dies, or if it's so decrepit that you want it killed, you have to pay.
Right.
Of course, the difference between being paid and having to pay becomes an inducement for the death of the horse earlier.
Well, there are clearly market forces at play here, as are set out in the amicus brief, in particular of the Illinois Farm Bureau and the Horsemen's Council. The intervention in the market here, I mean, that decision that you're referring to, the decision of any individual horse owner to sell, remains with the individual owner of the horse. And if they don't want to sell,
there's only one place. There's only one thing to do with an old horse. I mean, there's only, as far as, at least according to the amicus brief, but you haven't said anything to, I mean, you haven't presented any evidence to the contrary. The only market is Cavell. And if you don't sell to Cavell for $300, whatever you get, you have to pay to get rid of the horse, so...
But if the end use to which Cavell puts the horse...
I suppose you could turn in your old relatives, you know, get paid for this, something like that. They would die sooner, right? I mean, that's just basic, commerce.
The evidence in the record is that Cavell discloses the use to which...
Oh, sure. No, I'm not suggesting anything for. I'm just suggesting you put a person to the choice. He has a market for the horse involving his being killed. And the alternative is to hold on to the horse until it dies naturally or becomes so decrepit that it has to be killed. But in the latter case, he has to pay. So at the margin, there are going to be some people who say, well, rather than let old Dobbins, you know, out to pasture for his golden years, we're going to sell him to Cavell and get some money for him.
Yes, and that's the decision that rests with the individual horse owner.
It rests with the individual. All these things rest with the individual, but the state is allowed to intervene and say, I assume it's allowed to intervene and say, we prefer the welfare of the horses to the autonomy of choice of the owners.
Subject to the limitations of the Commerce Clause scrutiny, which requires...
Well, how much scrutiny does it get? Because it's not a case where the law is based on a preference for a local competitor, right?
Right.
It's not as if their concern were this is a foreign-owned slaughterhouse rather than Illinois slaughterhouse. That would be clear-cut discrimination in favor of the locals. That would be questionable. This is balancing some animal rights conception against commercial freedom freedom to export. And those are very difficult to balance, aren't they?
Well, 2 points. First of all, I think there is evidence in the record in the legislative history that this is invidious discrimination that is driven at some level by the fact that ultimately the meat is being exported to Europeans who are consuming it, and that ultimately this is a business that benefits and is owned by foreigners. So that is in the record. On top of that...
Well, I don't think you can infer that there's hostility to foreigners. I mean, surely the purpose of protecting horses is more important than preventing Belgians from indulging their taste for horse meat.
Let me put that a different way. Is there any reason to believe that if there were a club of horse eaters in Chicago and they, you know, met every once in a while and ate a horse, that the state legislature would not have passed this law?
It was well understood when the legislature enacted this law that Cavell was the only company in the United States engaged in this
question.
Slaughter. I mean, there's just no... I'm sorry, if you could repeat your question.
The question is there any reason to believe that if there were a demand for horse meat for human consumption in the United States, the state would not have passed this law?
There's no evidence one way or the other on that point. The evidence
If there isn't any evidence, why don't we have to treat this as a law about animal welfare rather than a law about what's on the table in Brussels?
This is a law about what's on the table in Brussels because of the commerce in this particular product.
Well, but given that Cavell provides less than 1% of the horse meat that is consumed in Europe, how does the statute burden foreign commerce except in a very, very negligible way?
The Foreign Commerce Clause protects the United States and the ability of United States citizens and American businesses to participate in foreign commerce and foreign trade. The relevant market here is the United States export market in this particular product. And in fact, the fact that the state and the amici are referencing those statistics demonstrates what the true aim of the statute is.
But you haven't answered my question. I'm not understanding how the statute, when you view the percentage, how can that burden foreign commerce, as I say, except in the most negligible way? I mean, we know that it doesn't burden interstate commerce at all because there is no because there is a ban on human consumption of horse meat in the United States.
It burdens foreign commerce by prohibiting 100% of the market in this, the export market. All of the foreign commerce in this product is restricted by this statute.
Look, none of this has anything to do with discrimination, and it looks like you're just arguing the flip side of the contention in the National Paint case, where Chicago bans big magic markers and spray paint, and all of that paint is imported into Chicago from other states. None is made in Chicago. But we said that that's not a form of discrimination against commerce because it bans local and imported paint equally.
Yes, and I think that there's a couple points there. One is that there's a difference between import and export restrictions, and two...
No, they're completely reciprocal. What we said was we could treat it as discrimination if there were a good reason to think that the reason spray paint had been prohibited was that it was being made in Indiana and people were envious of Indiana or wanted to hurt the people in Indiana. But the only suggestion was that it was prohibited because Chicago didn't want graffiti paid. Sprayed.
And that,
we're just in the flip side here. If there's reason to think that this was adopted because people want to change what's for lunch in Brussels, that's one thing. But if it's adopted because of animal welfare concerns, that's a totally non-discriminatory basis.
The fact here is that the best evidence of legislative intent is the plain language of the statute, and everyone understood when this law was enacted that that's what it was about. It was about cutting off the exports.
You're saying two different things. The language doesn't say we don't like foreigners eating horse meat. And, you know, the governor's state is kind of strange. I was surprised, but he attributes this statute in significant part to the actress Bo Derek, whose family comes from Illinois, and I know, he said, the governor, they would be proud of the actions taken on behalf of our horses by Governor Blagojevich. So that doesn't sound as if there's anything involved in the case except a concern about horse's welfare. I mean, it's tenuous, but that seems to be the only motive. And also, even assuming that there's more to burdens on foreign commerce than discrimination in favor of locals, you know, we don't have a submission by the State Department or anything of that sort to suggest that Illinois is trying to administer its own foreign policy. That would be very objectionable, right? They say, we don't like the French and we're going to punish them by denying them horse meat, right? That would be an interference with federal prerogatives. But there's no suggestion of that. You do have that letter from the Belgian government, but it's very ambiguous. They don't say this is an affront to Belgium. They say we're watching this for you. So wouldn't it be better for us to assume there's no significant interference with the foreign relations or foreign commerce of the United States unless we're given some, you know, authoritative indication to the contrary?
On that point, the Foreign Commerce Clause protects against the risk of such conflict, and there is risk of that conflict here. In terms of the interests of the statute...
Let me ask Dirk Posner's question in a slightly different way. Are there any decisions of the Supreme Court finding a violation of the dormant Foreign Commerce Clause where the State Department has not filed, at a minimum, an amicus brief saying that the state law has interfered with foreign relations?
From the Supreme Court, no. There's the Fifth Circuit decision in Piazza. And from the Supreme Court, we have the statement in Container Corp that it's not dispositive, that such matters are not dispositive.
They may say it's not dispositive, but if the number of such cases is zero, and that certainly I couldn't find any. The most recent case it seems pertinent, Barclays Bank, suggests that it's not dispositive in the sense that even when the State Department howls, that won't condemn a state statute. But I haven't seen any case or any suggestion from the Supreme Court that when the State Department sees no problem for our foreign relations, a state statute would be declared invalid.
I don't think that that's a necessary requirement for the level of discrimination or burden on commerce that would otherwise suffice.
Why is it necessary? Otherwise, you're asking the judiciary to have its own foreign policy. I can understand arguments that, you know, the judiciary ought to defer, if they, we don't accept blindly, foreign policy statements by the president who conducts it. But the idea that the actual foreign policy people would be silent and the judicial branch would have its own foreign policy seems a little...
Well, I don't think they've been silent here. The United States has, in the D.C. litigation, taken the position that Cavell ought to remain open until the conclusion of that case. And there's also federal interest here.
You have opportunity to ask the State Department or the Solicitor General to file an amicus brief here. They obviously haven't been willing to do so.
Well, such things take time, Your Honor, especially in these summer months.
Change the subject slightly. Can't Cavell relocate to one of the states in which this slaughtering of horses is still legal?
Conceivably, however, that gets into the burdensome issue because in the Commerce Clause analysis, you do ask the question about, well, what if every state adopted the ban and then Cavell wouldn't be able to move? And there are cases where you could say that in every case involving a state statute.
According to the transcript of the Illinois House debate on the statute, the plant that was forced to close in Texas refitted the facility and reopened it as a cattle and bison slaughter facility. Could Cavell do the same things? Because it seems to import most of their horses from other states. I take it could do the same with cattle, or
the evidence here, Your Honor, is no, that could not be done. This was a plant that was built for the specific purpose of slaughtering horses for export for human consumption.
Well, but then what are the vast differences between Cavell and the plants in Texas?
That starts getting into sort of equipment and technology refitting type issues. The evidence in the trial court on that is that the use here has always been for the 20 years that Cavell has operated for the one purpose, and that it could not be converted, as you suggest.
Is this dispute going to be mooted if the USDA is prohibited from inspecting the plant?
The D.C. litigation is progressing. There is not yet, to my knowledge, a briefing schedule in that case. So I would hazard a guess that we'll have a ruling here before there.
And, you know, something that I was really wondering about is this, whether or not there's a factual dispute about how the horses that are slaughtered at Cavell are treated prior to slaughter, because Cavell claims that the company has incentives to treat the horses well so that they pass inspection. But the amicus briefs, my goodness, they certainly suggest that these animals are treated very poorly in actual practice.
On that point, there are USDA inspectors on site at Cavell who monitor and enforce with respect to that, and that testimony is in the record. With respect to the statements of the amici with which we disagree, that evidence was not properly before the district court, as we point out in our reply brief, and it's not properly before this court either. So I think there is no factual dispute on those issues. I'll reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Certainly, Mr. Calabrese. Ms. Walsh.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. This is a case about federalism. It's about the state's right to choose between animal welfare and a commercial enterprise. The state's choice in this matter is subject to no second guessing. As long as there's some rational basis, then the statute must stand under both.
Why did the governor say It's past time to stop slaughtering horses in Illinois and sending their meat overseas. What's that about? It would be okay to slaughter them if their meat stayed here?
Well, no, Your Honor, of course, because the statute's a complete ban.
I know, but so why does he say that? It's as if he thought it was particularly bad that this should be exported to gratify the decadent tastes of the foreigners, right? Struck me as odd. And your agriculture director said there's no domestic market for horse meat and therefore no need for this practice to continue in Illinois. Meat is being shipped overseas to places like Belgium, France, and Japan. That makes it sound as if Illinoisans wanted to eat horses, well, fine, that would be a domestic market.
Well, again, Your Honor,
it would be great.
I mean, those are comments about from the Department of Agriculture and the governor, but in fact, the statute that the General Assembly passed did, in fact, ban even the possession of horse meat for human consumption within Illinois, not to mention sale, import, export. It's a complete and total ban.
Is there any demand for horse meat in Illinois?
Not to my knowledge,
right.
And certainly not now because of the ban.
No, I understand, but
right.
I don't think it's something.
I mean, there's no, you know, if there were a market. I'm sorry?
I don't think Midwesterners eat horse meat.
No, and you know, surely if there were a market, one would think that Cavell would sell to that market.
Could the state of Illinois impose a tax on the importing or exporting of horse meat that was so great that it would effectively shut down the market? In other words, what I'm doing is I'm trying to get at the burden on foreign commerce, because it seems to me that this statute has the same effect as a truly prohibitive tax would have, and I'm not sure that a tax like that could stand.
Your Honor, because this statute is a complete ban, it can't be treated like a tax that would be a burden on something that's being exported or so. And as I think you noted earlier, the extratory.
Well, that's a strange argument.
A 1 cent tax would be unconstitutional. The import-export clause says states may not impose duties or exposts on imports or exports.
The maximum tax
Illinois can impose on horse meat being exported is zero.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I thought we were talking about the Commerce Clause and extraterritorial effect.
You don't need to ban taxes under the Commerce Clause if they're squarely and unambiguously banned by the Import-Export Clause.
I was trying to answer Judge Rosner's question. And I guess Judge Easterbrook answered it for me.
Well, I was trying to.
The answer has to rest on subsection A, right? It's not like a tax because it's a total ban.
Correct.
But I was trying to
analogize.
Thank you. I was trying to analogize.
To the taxes like in Japan Line or
sure.
So? Right. But I mean, Japan Line is completely an apposite because that, you know, and there they were taxing, the state was taxing, something that was a container that was used totally within foreign commerce. I mean, here, obviously, the horses come into Cavell. There's a lot of intrastate activity. The horses come into Cavell from brokers primarily or from individuals, but primarily from brokers. The horses are killed here. The meat is processed here. I mean, this is almost until you get to the step of the export, which is long after at the end of the chain. This is all intrastate activity, and as such, the Commerce Clause isn't even implicated.
Well, Congress, of course, made an express finding in the Meat Inspection Act. And what Congress said was that all animals and articles which are regulated under this chapter are either in interstate or foreign commerce and substantially affect such commerce. So why doesn't that finding trigger more exacting scrutiny under the Foreign Commerce Clause? I mean, surely you're not suggesting that we're not bound by that finding.
Right, but that finding has to do with the purpose of the Meat Inspection Act itself, and the purpose of that is to make sure that, you know, that the products that go out are not either within, you know, in interstate commerce or foreign commerce are not adulterated, and that they're properly labeled and so on. The Federal Meat Inspection Act, its central concern is the fact that meat be nationally uniform in terms of grade, how it's inspected, how it's processed. It's not concerned with commerce in that in the way that we're talking about in terms of foreign commerce. The Foreign Commerce Clause is concerned about an extraterritorial effect of a state, you know, the dormant Foreign Commerce Clause is concerned about the extraterritorial effect of a state law.
So simply burdening foreign commerce isn't enough to create any sort of problem? Is that what you're saying?
Well, Your Honor, if we're talking about the amendment, by its terms, it doesn't burden foreign commerce. It burdens it burdens Cavell, who has elected to exclusively export its product.
But Congress has, it seems, has already determined that horse meat substantially affects foreign commerce, hasn't it?
But in terms of its quality, not in terms of what, you know, this is
simply
part
on
of the,
its quality.
In terms of its quality, how it's inspected, how it's labeled, how it goes out, they want national standards for those things. But this is, I mean, that argument the plaintiff makes would make it sound as though the Federal Meat Inspection Act concerns what must be slaughtered as opposed to how it is slaughtered. The focus, again, of the Meat Inspection Act is on meat inspection and general standards. It's not really, it's not on foreign and interstate commerce. It's just that they're the, it's to ensure that materials that are put into foreign and interstate commerce are not adulterated and are in conformance with national standards, which is what the inspection does.
What is it? What do you think happens to these horses? Will happen to these horses after Cavell is shut down?
Well, I think one of the things that will happen is that there'll be less horse theft. Less horse theft. There's
horse theft.
Horse theft. Yes, because
are rustlers still hanged in Illinois?
No, sadly. But as Your Honor noted, there's a financial incentive. I'm sorry. No, they are not, to my knowledge. There's a financial incentive to in this business to bring a horse that is, and this is what the district court found too, that Illinois, the purpose of the statute, one of the rational basis.
No evidence of horse theft. Come on.
Your Honor, there doesn't have to be evidence, empirical evidence for a rational basis test. This is one of the reasons, for example, that in the Fifth Circuit. That the Fifth Circuit found that this was one of the justifications, sufficient justifications.
Is there any evidence of horse theft? Sounds ridiculous because they're only getting $300. Now, what's involved in stealing the horse, transporting the horse, that doesn't sound like a profitable form of crime.
Also, well, of course, in the Fifth Circuit, you know, you have all those western states where there are more horses than there are people, whereas here in Illinois, they're having to import the horses. I mean, there aren't enough horses.
Right. Well, my understanding is that they imported them to Texas as well from other states. But also my understanding is that in California, for example, when they put in the ban on horse meat, that horse theft, and you wouldn't think of California as being as big a horse state as, say, Texas, dropped precipitously. And
you
so there is a market.
You didn't refer to any of this in your brief, did you?
I'm sorry?
You didn't refer to any of this in your brief, did you?
No, Your Honor, because it wasn't
your
before.
Your brief was signally devoid of any factual content whatsoever.
Your Honor, but again, with the rational basis test doesn't require the state to put up empirical evidence of the bases
shouldn't a state give some reasons for thinking something is rational?
Right, and the state
didn't give any reason.
Well, certainly, Your Honor, I think we did.
You didn't even say in your brief that fewer horses would be killed.
Well, Your Honor, that it just stands to reason.
No, it doesn't stand to reason, because these horses are going to be killed anyway.
Well, Your Honor, that's not necessarily true.
What do you think, they're going to live forever?
No, I mean, they'll be killed. I'm sorry?
We have immortal horses in Illinois, but for this statute?
They won't be killed immediately. They would...
No, look, you have a horse, and at some point you decide this horse has had it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're prepared to sell your beloved horse to the slaughterhouse, well, you're prepared to do something else bad to it, aren't you?
Well,
you don't want him anymore. You want to get rid of him.
Well, Your Honor, remember that most of the horses that come to Cavell come through brokers, and there was no evidence in the record that the people who sold to the brokers actually, I mean, as opposed to the people who sold to Cavell.
So there's not only horse theft, but there's some massive fraud?
No, no.
Brokers come to people and say, gee, you know, your horse, we'd love to take your horse.
No, Your Honor, I mean, they're usually at auctions, as I understand it. But again, I mean...
If you auction your horse, you're through with it. You could have no expectations that horse is going to have a long, happy life after you've gotten rid of it.
Well, not necessarily, Your Honor, because other people might buy it. I mean, that's what an auction is for. Other people might buy it and use it. Other people might decide to give it to a... they have sort of rescue ranches for horses.
But they don't, right? Because these horses are sold to Cavell very cheap. If someone wanted a horse for riding, he's going to pay more than $300.
I don't know that, Your Honor. I mean,
no, you don't know anything, right?
What?
This is just a tissue of speculation, because your conception of rational basis is all you have to do is conjecture. You don't have any duty to, I don't mean to present trial type evidence, but you know, to cite something which would say, yes, there's horse theft. Yes, in the auction, Cavell's actually competing against people who would have this horse for riding and take care of it and so on. It may well be that sort of material, but you haven't looked for it.
But again, Your Honor, it's the question is, what could the General Assembly have rationally believed at the time?
Well, and what's worrisome about the case is it's a foreign-owned company exporting to a foreign country. So there's no real Illinois interest in this company. Then you have the angry neighbors, according to one of the amicus curiae briefs, who don't want to pay for a nuisance suit, so they go to the legislature. So, you know, there is at least a flavor here of kind of ganging up against this foreign enterprise, foreign shareholders, foreign consumers. So there's no real there's no Illinoisan to defend them, right?
Well,
this is a concern.
Well, certainly, Your Honor. I mean, the plaintiffs are not only Cavell, but they include also the individuals. So, I mean, there
what
are people who the individual
the
plaintiffs, employees.
How many are there?
Who have altogether?
Yeah.
Approximately 60, I believe.
What is the state's primary justification for the statute? What purpose is What is the primary justification?
Right. I think, as the legislative debates indicated to us, is that the General Assembly was concerned about the slaughter of what has come to be companion animals, and that not just that they're companion animals, but they have their nature, when they're led to slaughter, is different from cattle, from pigs, and so on. They're more flighty, they're more fragile, and that, you know, given what actually, although the method that's used for slaughter is technically in compliance with federal law, it's how it's done that's the problem.
Well, you don't have any evidence as to how it's done. You don't know anything about that. You have some completely unsupported statement about the difference between chemical euthanasia and having a bolt through your forehead.
Well, again, Your Honor, the question is, what did the General Assembly rationally believe would be the problem that would be...
They rationally believe Bo Derek wants to save a few horses. That's what they seem to believe.
Well, no, I mean, the question is, did the General Assembly rationally believe that...
Look, aren't most horses killed?
Or die, sure. There are no immortal horses, to my knowledge.
No, aren't they killed rather than allowed to die of old age?
I don't know that.
Well, that's kind of germane, isn't it?
Well, not necessarily.
I mean, it's hard to see they're that.
I'm sorry.
They're that altruistic about horses if they don't mind you killing your horse.
Well, the problem, Your Honor, the General Assembly could have rationally believed that it was best to not have these tens of thousands of horses killed in this manner. And this is the most central, this is the largest number of horses that are killed in any one process. I mean, usually, as you indicated earlier, as the plaintiff indicated earlier, it's an individual decision. And so people decide to send their horse to a horse rescue place. They decide to kill the horse and have the guy come with the backhoe for $250. Or they, you know, and these are the choices that the General Assembly decided as a matter of public policy that they wanted to limit horse owners in Illinois to doing.
Do the brokers ever furnish some of their horses to these rendering plants?
I don't know.
Pet food.
To my knowledge, and the amici said this, and I asked the Department of Agriculture too, that horses aren't used for pet food these days, and haven't been for some time.
How about glue?
Yes, and this is the difference. You know, for rendering, when you turn horses into glue and gelatin and all those other things.
That's disgusting.
Your Honor, it's life.
Why is boiling horses better than?
Because those horses can be already dead by whatever more humane reason. I'm sorry?
What if they're not?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What if they're not dead when they reach the rendering plant?
What happens to them? To my knowledge, they're always dead when they reach the rendering plant.
That's reassuring.
then that's done in...
General Assembly of Illinois considering legislation to ban the slaughter and eating of chickens for human consumption? You know, the way in which chickens are raised and slaughtered is a lot worse than the way in which these horses are slaughtered.
Well, as Your Honors know, the foie gras ban passed muster, at least in the district court. And no, the General Assembly is not intending to ban the slaughter of chickens.
The legislatures are using in Illinois is we'll ban things that seem symbolic, but laws that might actually protect animal welfare will not be considered.
No, Your Honor, I believe that certainly there are federal laws with regard. There are poultry laws, just like there's a meat inspection law.
Poultry
and there are also state
laws don't ensure that the poultry live long, happy, and productive lives. They ensure that they're safe and wholesome.
But there are other state laws that ensure the humane treatment of all animals, whether they're being used for livestock or not. But this is a difference. Cows, pigs, all of them are raised as livestock. They don't have the same, they don't present the same policy choice to the general.
I don't understand. This law seems to apply to horses raised as livestock.
Horses are defined in Illinois as companion animals. So, and horses, generally speaking, are not raised to be eaten.
No, look, are you saying that this law, as written, would permit Cavell to open a ranch next to its place and raise horses as livestock and slaughter them?
No.
All right. Then why did you answer my question originally the way you did? This law bans the slaughter of horses for human consumption whether or not they are raised as livestock.
Your Honor, what I'm trying to say is that horses are not raised as livestock.
Well,
and so,
they haven't been raised as livestock in the past. If the state allowed it, I assume that it might be an economical thing to do.
Well, certainly, Your Honor, I mean, it could be were it not for the total ban on horse meat for human consumption and slaughtering. But again, I mean, this is, we have to go back to...
As you may know, there's a long dispute in utilitarian theory about whether eating cows makes cows better off, because there are an awful lot more of them than there would be if we couldn't eat them.
Well, yes, that's certainly true, Your Honor.
Why would that be true of horses as well?
Because, again, Your Honor,
I don't see any reason to believe that the Illinois legislature carefully read Bentham before it enacted this law. But
sadly, no, Your Honor. If I may finish?
Sure.
Unless the court has other questions?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Thank you very much, Ms. Welsh.
Thank you, Your Honor. We ask that you affirm because the state did have a rational basis for this law. Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Calabrese?
Yes, very briefly.
Just a couple points I wanted to address before closing. First, with respect to the state's argument on the Meat Inspection Act, the federal government in the Meat Inspection Act defines horses as food. And the purpose of the act is broader than the narrow reading that the state suggests. The purpose does extend, and this is in the discussion in our reply, to identity, to the identity of the meat, and that's the ingredient preemption.
There's a difference between a premise and a command. They have the statute because, in fact, meat was being sold for human consumption. That doesn't mean that they want it always to be sold for human consumption, right?
Yes, but the background interpretive principle of Bank of Barnett suggests that when the federal government gives permission, if they want to make that permission contingent, they know how to do that, and that's not the kind of inspection or statute
we have.
Look,
they impose a tax on illegal activities, income from illegal activities. That doesn't mean they're approving the illegal activities. They're saying if these activities go on, we want our cut. Well, similarly, if there happens to be horse eating, they want it done, I mean, for our foreign relations with these countries. We want the horses to be healthy so we're not infecting the farmers. Right? That doesn't mean we want that there's a federal policy of promoting or permitting the eating of horses.
Although it would be unusual if that were the case for the USDA to have inspectors on site at Cavell.
But they're paid so. They're being paid.
There's just nothing about agricultural inspections. Think about corporate mergers. There's elaborate federal regulation of corporate mergers under the securities laws and what shareholders get to vote on. Suppose a state bans mergers without unanimous consent of all the shareholders. That was the common law rule long ago. Would that violate federal law on the ground that if a merger occurs, it would have to comply with a whole bunch of federal rules?
I don't know enough about that area of the law.
Not conceivable. In fact, this court has held. Wisconsin passed such a law,
okay,
and requiring essentially unanimous consent for mergers, and we held it was perfectly consistent with federal law because one could, of course, comply with both. If you don't have any mergers, you're not violating federal law. Federal law just regulates what happens when a merger is proposed, and it looks to me like federal law regulates what happens if somebody wants to slaughter horses to eat them, but it doesn't compel anybody to slaughter horses.
Again, I would refer back to Bank of Barnett, where the Supreme Court identified the principle that the federal government gives permission and doesn't limit it. To your question that you started to ask, until the last budget bill, the USDA paid for the inspectors. So for the first 19 years, Cavell was in operation.
I understand.
I see my time is up. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.